friends, and welcome to this week's edition of Save Our Schools with Dear JCPS. Dear JCPS is a district-focused stakeholder advocacy group that demands accountability and transparency from JCPS through a lens of equity. Save Our Schools Kentucky is a statewide advocacy group that seeks to expose and prevent attempts to privatize our public schools, including charter schools and everything else from the ALEC playbook.
We are live in the studio. This is Gay Adelman, and I'm here with
Yvonne Rovira.
And on the phone with us is a teacher from JCPS, Tiffany Dunn. Tiffany is not only a teacher, but she is also a parent of an Oldham County student, and a taxpayer and a voter. And I'm going to embarrass her a little bit and also point out that she is a conservative. So oftentimes people think that the only people fighting against charter schools and the privatization efforts are Democrats, but that's not true. Save Our Schools Kentucky is a bipartisan group, and Tiffany is one of the officers on our board at Save Our Schools as well. Hello, Tiffany, and welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Absolutely, and you are a teacher at Lassiter Middle.
Correct.
Tell us a little bit about what you do there.
I am in my sixth year as an ESL teacher there, and I teach sixth graders. Been a little bit concerned lately just about the direction that not only our school's headed in, but just kind of the district in general with the new state labels for our schools, the TSI and CSI, and kind of where the predicament that's putting our schools in, and how teachers are being treated and ultimately the students.
Absolutely. And you have expressed a concern to me, and I don't want to speak out of turn and reveal anything that you may have told me in confidence, so I'm going to let you kind of take the lead on anything that you want to share regarding those concerns. But I do know that you have indicated that you are going to be speaking at Tuesday night's JCPS school board meeting. Is that correct?
Yes. Really, I'm just concerned that our administration has told us in specific terms that we are operating as if we are already have been taken over by the state. And which is true, we are operating in that way. Our PLCs have been kind of hijacked by the district. I'm in an English PLC, and every PLC, we have a district official there that's kind of guiding and directing and kind of mandating certain tests be given, when they're given, how that data is looked at, and so on. So the teacher autonomy is really under attack, and unfortunately our contract with the union really doesn't address teacher autonomy very much. There's not a whole lot that I think that we can do at this point. And so the concerning part for our students, first of all, for teachers, it just causes really bad morale. Teaching is really a personal thing. We all teach. We teach the standards. We teach what the state tells us to teach. But we all teach it in our own way with our own resources and materials. So teaching is a personal thing. So when that comes under attack, teachers feel attacked personally. And so morale goes down. And then you can just imagine what that's like for kids when their teachers are having to give certain tests and assessments on certain days and teach certain content that, is not necessarily what is best for them. So that's kind of the situation that we're in right now. And a lot of these schools that have been labeled by Wayne and his cronies, TSI and CSI.
And by Wayne, you were referring to Dr. Wayne Lewis, who is the Kentucky, as Yvonne likes to call him, Education Czar.
Education Czar, Wayne Lewis.
He is the commissioner. He was appointed by a board that was appointed by Bevan. So there's some history there and some story there. Let's fill our listeners in a little bit about the state takeover. This summer, there was a threat of a state takeover. There was some back and forth between our elected board, our Jefferson County elected board, and the state. regarding that takeover, and we did come out with a compromise, is what they called it. I'm calling it a stay of execution because essentially it says that in 2 years they're going to come back and audit us, and we know that their goal from this audit is to take over our district, take over the decision-making ability that our elected board currently holds, and we believe that it's so that they can authorize charters, because that's where charter school authorization sits, is at the school board level, as well as at the mayoral level in Jefferson County and Fayette County, assuming that those mayors sign up to become authorizers. And then there's also the appeal, you can appeal that, if you get turned down at the district level, you can appeal it to the state. So there are different players who really kind of want to hold that authorization card, and we think that that's one of the main reasons that the state was going after our board. So it confuses me, if we've gotten a stay of execution, why we would still operate as if we're in takeover mode, because what was the whole point of avoiding this takeover, at least getting 2 more years to show what we can do at the district level, if we're just going to go ahead and act as if we're in a takeover and focus more on what they call accountability. And I reluctantly even use that term tongue-in-cheek, because everybody wants accountability. There's nothing wrong with accountability, but they're using accountability as a way to penalize our schools and do very damaging things to our schools and our teachers and our students. And so we want to, we really want to see the next 2 years be spent doing what we've been saying we've been trying to do. Invest in education, smaller class sizes, front-end supports and resources, restorative practices, all those wonderful things that we finally have a superintendent who gets it, and let's show them what we can do over the next 2 years. Why would we, it just makes no sense to me why we would behave as if we're in state takeover and go ahead and let that quote-unquote accountability prevent us from doing what's best for students. So what are your thoughts, Tiffany, about why they're going that route?
To be honest, I'm not really sure, and I almost think it's just a bit of submission fear, and I don't, you know why we would do that, because when we submit to what they want us to fail. So we're on a one track to fail with what we're doing here, because we're doing exactly what they want. To control teachers, to control students, and when you do that, you create an environment of failure. It just is. That's what the research shows. The more you clamp down on people, the more you put pressure on students to perform, the worse everybody does, which is exactly what I'm personally seeing in my school. We're putting a ton of focus on math scores and math testing. I spent in the last 2 days, my kids have been in testing for 4 hours without accommodation of course, ESL without accommodation. So we're effectively, abusing a lot of these children by keeping them in these testing areas and testing them and using scores that I would argue, especially without accommodations, are not valid data. So
absolutely,
we are just giving in without any good reason. And if if we were going to, if this is what we're going to do, then why not let them take us over to begin with? I don't understand that mentality. And that's why I'm going to speak at the board meeting to put that out there. And as you said, dear JCPS, we're looking for accountability. Why is this the message that's being sent out when the district, the taxpayers, the teachers, the parents fought so hard against the takeover, and then it's almost blindness in the back door on us? It's not right.
Well, and if you give them what they want, if they're abusive and manipulative and we keep giving them what they want, they're just going to continue to use it against us anyway, and they're looking for that quote-unquote failing schools narrative. And they're going to find it no matter how great we are, no matter what we do. So we might as well just do what we know is best.
Well, and another thing, having students take 4 hours of tests without accommodations, how can that be legal under federal law?
It's abusive.
In addition to that, it's just plain illegal.
Yeah.
Don't we have to follow their ISP? Just like with special needs kids, we have to follow their IEP. That's federal law. That's not, you know, something left to your discretion. You do it if it's convenient or you're feeling magnanimous that day. No, their accommodations are required under federal law. Am I wrong about this?
That's exactly right. And not only that takes me back to the PLCs and the pacing of instruction, English learners are guaranteed by their PSPs, which of course is their program service plan, which guarantees them certain accommodations like a reader, extended time. That violates creating an environment where the teacher has to teach on a certain pace with other teachers, violates those children's rights to their federal and state accommodations, which say they get adapted pace of instruction. So we have a lot of, real sketchy, sketchy at best and legal at worst things going on here, especially for children of high need, ESL, ECE children that someone has to stand up for. And, of course, Wayne and their crew certainly do not care about these children. If they did, they would make them a priority, which we've definitely not seen. So,
well, and here's my biggest concern with this whole thing. As a taxpayer, my youngest graduated from JCPS. My oldest graduated before he moved to Kentucky. So my only son, who was school age in Kentucky, graduated from a school in the West End. And I saw what you're talking about that living in fear of a takeover. I mean, Shawnee, the Academy at Shawnee, it was what alerted me to this whole living in fear of a takeover, when every time we shook things up, change for the sake of change, just to make it look like we were doing something productive so Frankfurt would stay out of our business, is what led to us becoming the organization that we are today. So holding leaders accountable, making sure our board members are informed and aware of what's really going on behind the scenes, because the administration, the former administration, was telling the board members one thing and getting their agenda passed. But what was really happening in the schools and with students and with teachers was a complete different thing. And it was the same thing as what you're talking about that you're experiencing at Lassiter. And when I would push back, the assistant superintendent at the time even said, if we don't do this, we're going to be taken over by the state. Like, that fear is what put that adult-focused attention on what really mattered. And so what seems to be missing in this entire dynamic is that the superintendent does not report to Frankfurt. Marty Polio reports to the board, our elected board. And who does our elected board report to? Us, the voters. So why we worry so much about what Frankfurt thinks or says or does, first of all, that's what's gotten us in this mess in the first place. But second of all, it's irrelevant. And I just want to be like, wave my hand at Dr. Polio and say, hey, look over here. It's the voters and the parents and the constituents that you need to be listening to. You need to be paying attention and making sure your board stays happy, and your board's going to stay happy if you help them stay in office. So who cares what Frankfurt says we need to be doing? Or, like, this is our moment. This is our two-year window to really make a difference, to be bold, to be creative, to take some risks, to not worry about scores. Oh my goodness, let's stop worrying about the scores for just a little bit and actually do what's best for kids. Because we all know you can rearrange the classrooms and rearrange the student assignment plan and rearrange your numbers to make it look like you're doing something that'll keep them off our backs. But it's harmful to our students, and it's most harmful to our most vulnerable students, because they're the ones that get shifted around like pawns in these games. So that's, if I speak Tuesday night, that's probably going to be my message, is why do we care what Frankfurt thinks? Why do we care what Wayne Lewis, Hal Heiner, Matt Bevin say or do? Because if you're doing what's best for kids, none of that other stuff should matter. And if you get threatened by Frankfurt because you did what was best for kids, guess what? the parents and the taxpayers and the constituents are going to come to your defense. Have faith in us that we're going to come to your defense, because I think we've shown that we're paying attention.
Well, and in addition to this, you know, it's their goal is to cram charter schools down our throats. So if we became the best school district in America, you know,
that would mess up their plan.
No, it wouldn't. They would come up with some other reason why we really totally need charters.
You are correct.
They're going to, you know, they don't, it doesn't, but in a way that gives you total freedom.
True.
Because they're going to do what they're going to do regardless of what you do. So you may as well do what's right.
That's right.
They're going to cut some, in 2 years there'll be an excuse for a takeover. Your scores are too high.
The target is always moving.
The target is always moving. And it's always...
The target will always move, and that is the key point that we always, you know, meet, that Yvonne's exactly right. They're going to always find a reason. My school was on the up and up. When we were in the bottom 5% of the state. We were, like, the worst middle school, like, in Jefferson County a few years ago. And we've just been on the up and up ever since, and we're in the middle of the pack. In Jefferson County, and we're overcrowded now because so many kids want to come to our school. We have a wonderful school, but we look at us right now, and why? Because Target moved, and so the accountability model moved and changed. So when you meet what they want,
they move the target.
Then they got to move it, because then they can't say you're a failure.
That's right.
So, you know, that. There's it's a shell game, and we hear that a lot, but it's a shell game because they are going to do, like Yvonne said, they're going to do what they want to do, and so we can't worry about that because they're going to do it anyway.
Right.
We have to do what's right for kids and for our parents and our communities and who we serve, you know, so...
So you mentioned that there's not much that we can do, that the teachers can do, but what can parents do? Can parents, let's talk about this concept of opting out, which I'm running into a lot of people that have never heard of it, and I think it's important that we let people know what their rights are as parents regarding opting out and what kind of, what's in the future.
Well, actually, I think we should backtrack a minute and define what we mean by opting out.
Yes, and I was hoping that Tiffany would define that.
Because she's the best.
She's really good at that. Do you want to fill us in?
Sure. Well, you know, opting out started a few years ago, and what it is the parent, this is speaking to your point about what parents can do, is, and our friend Diane Ravitch has said that the club that they use to beat and hammer schools with are the test scores. And we've just been talking about that. How did we get into this TSI, BSI situation? Well, it was created by the test scores. So the opt-out movement was rooted in civil disobedience, where parents and children are refusing to take these high-stakes tests that are being used to judge their teachers, judge themselves, judge their children, judge their community, and judge their school.
And even become self-fulfilling prophecies, because as you mentioned, your scores went up and then suddenly people started flocking to Lassiter. Doesn't necessarily mean anything changed at Lassiter. It's this perception that the school is good because of the scores. So what that also does is when you have schools with bad scores, they become self-fulfilling prophecies too. And it creates this widening gap, this widening disparity. Sorry, go ahead.
Right, and you know, these schools that are serving higher needs populations are obviously always going to have the lower scores.
Right.
That's just the way it will be. But that's what the opt-out movement is rooted in, is taking away the data that they use to ruin our schools. And I do have some good news on the, I do believe there will be opt-out legislation finally filed.
Yay.
In Kentucky. Right now, it is not, you know, quote-unquote legal to opt your child out. However, you can't, your child and my child have to pass or refuse to take the state assessment, the K-PREP assessment. But at this point in time, they have to sit and stare because there is no law protecting their right to an education. I mean, not having to sit and stare. So this law, that will be put out this session, will be filed this session, will guarantee that the child, if parents will be made aware, the district will have to make them aware of their right to opt their child out of testing. They will have to give that child an alternative assignment, meaningful alternative assignment during the state test. So I'm really hoping that we can start this movement, you know, maybe in Jefferson County, but and tell Wayne, I mean, send a message to Frankfurt, send a message to Wayne, send a message to Governor Bevin that we're not going to allow you to use our children and their data that is erroneous at best to label our children, to label our schools, to and our community as failures. So I'm really excited about that, and I'm hoping that with the law, we will be able to get a good movement going, not only here in Jefferson County, but Fayette and these other places across the state that are just being targeted because of their scores. So,
absolutely. And explain for our listeners what you mean by sit and stare.
A sit and stare is just where kids are made to stay in the testing room. So they are given the test, but the child, of course, refuses to take it, and so they are not allowed to read a book. They're not allowed to, do their math homework or anything else. They are made to sit there for hours on end, which is what has hindered our ability to get people to opt out because they don't want to put their child through that.
Absolutely.
And which was kind
it's
of
punishment.
The problem that I, yeah, exactly. So that's kind of the problem that I ran into with my own daughter. She opted out in third and fourth grade, and in fifth grade, I finally, as the tests were getting longer, I felt like I had to, you know, let her take the test just for the pure fact that I felt horrible at making her sit there for that long. So she has taken the test for the past 2 years, but if this bill passes, which I'm hopeful that it will, if it's introduced, it will be introduced by Republican legislators, that I will be the first person to opt my child out, if that bill is passed. And I'm hoping that we can, like I said, get a groundswell of people who will do the same and force people to look at our schools in a different light than just our test scores.
Absolutely.
Tiffany, could you tell us a little bit about this nationwide? I think this is a bigger trend, say, in New York State and some other places. Could you tell us about that?
Well, one place that's really known for opt-out would be Long Island, New York. They had a really great grassroots movement there to fight back. I mean, New York is a very liberal state. And so it goes back to our point earlier, school privatization, the tax on public schools are coming from all around. Not just from one party. In the
yes.
case of Kentucky, it happens to be Republicans, but in New York, they got it from the Democrats. So it all depends on where you are. But
yep.
Long Island, they had, in one place, like 90% opt out. I mean, they had parents.
Great.
There was no, when you have a certain percentage of parents opt their kids out, you have it, the data is not usable. They can't use the data anymore. And that was the reason they did that, was partly because they were using scores to for teacher merit pay and that kind of thing. So when you take away the data, they can't use that formula. There's not enough data to provide, to do what they want to do.
Right, and it also penalizes. When you use scores for teacher merit pay, you're penalizing the teachers who are serving the higher needs population. We're trying to recruit to these struggling schools, and in fact, we're making it's counterintuitive when you make their pay based on their student scores, because as you mentioned, poverty, trauma, the gap students don't score as well. So it's counterintuitive. So
absolutely.
Legislation, if it passes, or if it's introduced, and hopefully it will be, and it'll pass, it still probably won't go into effect until the 2019-2020 school year. So this coming May, we might still have to exercise our sit and stare option to opt out. And so if a parent was interested in still learning more about how to do that, we'll probably, Dear JCPS will probably be hosting another information session to coach our parents what that means and how what that looks like. We did one of those maybe two years ago. Do you remember that, Yvonne?
I don't.
You were with us.
I was.
It was called The Three R's, Parents' Rights, Responsibilities, and Repercussions of Opting Out. Because there can be consequences if you are a student who is trying to navigate the path to manual, for example.
Yes. If you're, you know.
It could be used against you.
If you're bent on getting your child into mail or manual, well, opt out is not for you.
Maybe not the state test, or maybe there's another test. It's really more about civil disobedience. It's about denying them the data. Mm-hmm. It's about...
to hurt schools.
I think I heard somewhere if you have 20% of your students opting out of the test, then the entire district's data is no longer valid. I know you said 90% actually did it, but I think even if we get up to 20%, we've accomplished our goal.
Yes.
So parents can still, especially parents of special needs students, of English language learner students, if we can communicate that to them, they can possibly avoid their students from suffering from some of the abusive practices that end up happening. Because every student has to take the same test, regardless of their ability, regardless of their IEP. Regardless,
or ISP.
Or ISP. So you've maybe got special needs students who are cognitively impaired or physically impaired, still being forced to take the same test, even though we know that their scores are going to be different than the mainstream population. And then those schools that serve a high-needs population get penalized and so forth. So... If a student were to sit and stare, they basically still fill in their name and class information, but then they leave all of the answers blank. Is that correct? So you don't fill in any of the bubbles.
Right. I've heard of people having their kids fill in the wrong answers or what have you. I don't agree with that. I've told my daughter, don't even open the test booklet. I know in Kentucky for the K-prep is being changed this year, so we don't even know what the test is going to be for this year. They're changing it. But in the past, kids have had third graders, because that's when K-prep starts, they have to sign a contract with this testing company. Before they'll let you take the test, you have to sign this little thing that says, you know, hey, I'll do my best, I won't cheat, I won't tell anybody, you know, what I saw on this test. I mean, we're talking about third graders and fourth graders.
Well, they have pep rallies and
yes, they
prizes
do.
And candies and
yeah.
And they post your scores publicly. And
pizza parties for the kids
who do
great.
Shame you if you don't do great. It's horrible.
Exactly. We've seen a lot across the state. We've seen a lot of really, with the math tests, and especially with K-PREP, we've seen a lot of really bad things that have been done to children to try and shame them into doing better, or, you know, bribe them into doing better on a standardized test assessment that, again, is set up, that has racial, that is racially insensitive a lot of times, that's culturally insensitive to certain groups that, you know, that don't understand what snow is, or, you know, things that maybe we don't even imagine these children haven't experienced. And so these tests are set up to fail from the get-go, and then we're trying to bribe them and coerce them in certain ways to get them to do well on these tests. And then we're having to sign this agreement with Kate, with Pearson. I mean, stop it.
Right.
You know, but yeah, I never encourage anyone to have their kids go through and bubble in answers. I say don't sign anything, don't write on that test booklet at all.
I mean, I think if you're going to be if you're going to opt out, you want it to be obvious that that's what you've done. And
right.
A zero cut score, if that's what it's called, you know better than I do, but a zero score is more obvious than an intentional failing score.
You brought up Pearson, Tiffany. And I think our listeners deserve to know what's pushing these high-stakes testing. It's all about the Benjamins. Pearson designs the tests. They sell the material that you can use to prep for the test. They sell books that the eager beaver parents can have their kids study from. I mean, it's just, they sell curriculum that helps you prepare for the test. It's just a big money train.
And they start preparing in kindergarten, first grade, second grade, because they know the big test comes in third grade. So
yes,
it's also abusive in that regard, that we're prepping for the test to prepare for the test to prepare for the test. And that's when we see an increasing number of hours spent and resources spent. And then on top of that, Tiffany and Yvonne, you're also a teacher. You don't even know what the students miss. It's not used to guide instruction. You don't get the scores back until the following year, school year.
So the kids moved on. You don't have them anymore.
And you don't get the answer key to say, oh, look, this is what they missed, so that you can address it.
Oh, and it's illegal.
Right.
If you're found doing that as a teacher, going, oh, look what, Johnny, I can see here, walking around, that he didn't do well on that question. No, don't you dare, because that, you'll get fired for that. So even to try and use the data to help your kid, absolutely. We don't get anything back on this test except for a cut score and then a label. So, like, I got my daughter's scores back. She got it. This was her score. This was the district average. This was the state average. And this is how she, and she's proficient. And then, and same thing for math, but English and math. So they're not saying she's drawn here, she needs work here, these are the standards from that right there that this is not about improving instruction. And if you know anything about assessment is always and only to be used to guide instruction. So that's what makes us have stakes. That's what makes it abusive. That's what makes it just so wrong.
And so obvious.
For our kids.
It makes it obvious that this isn't
intended
to help students or schools. It's nothing more than to label, to feed that failing school's narrative so that they can justify the changes that they're trying to implement across the country, not just here in Kentucky.
And it makes it easier to move the target,
absolutely.
You don't know what you missed. So, they can keep moving the target and the formulas on you, and you're just confused.
Even without that, it's a license for Pearson to make money, because almost all this testing goes through Pearson.
Well, and speaking of moving the target, the new TSI and CSI scores that were just released, what are your thoughts about the motivation behind identifying more schools as failing?
Well, I think it should be alarming to all Kentuckians that we have over half our schools in TSI status, that over half are failing in some area in their school. When in Oldham County, of course, we're known for having great schools, but why? Because we have a 90-some% white, well, we're the wealthiest county in the state, or one of the wealthiest, but. All we have are a middle and a high school in Crestwood that are award-winning, and one of them, the high school, is nationally ranked and is in TSI status. So I think what's happening here is that Wayne's kind of getting his hand caught in the cookie jar a little bit. So they came up with this formula, and then all of a sudden, you're not just putting your finger, you're not just pointing your finger at the schools in the West End or in JCPS, you're pointing them at these wealthy white schools now, and people are going to bristle up at that, because this is my award-winning school, my property values are tied to the school, yada, yada, yada. So I've heard from several people just that out in the different school districts that are like that, that think that that's kind of where Wayne's going to get kind of caught in a sticky situation, is because some people don't necessarily care if you point to JCPS, if you point to these
someone else's school,
bad schools in Fayette or Jefferson County or wherever. But when you start pointing the finger at our school out here, that we love our school, then they're going to have issue. And so this political season, I went and walked and canvassed Oldham County and several neighborhoods in Oldham County with some other great people, and the feedback was very negative as far as, wow, we didn't know this.
Right.
We they just thought their schools were great. Well, privatization train has many stops. It may not start in Oldham County, but it'll come here. And so this is the first kind of way to get it here, and is to label our schools and to plant that seed of doubt in people's minds. Oh, well, maybe they're not so great or whatever.
Right.
And that's what they do.
Well, they've got financial backers who helped them get elected to office. Our legislators do, and our governor does. And they campaigned on charter schools. They made that promise to their financial backers. And so because we as voters have pretty much expressed our dissatisfaction and dislike for privatization of public education, now we see that they're doing everything they can to go around the voters' wishes. And that's been through the appointment of people to the state board that then appointed a new commissioner. And then some of the changes that we've seen made that don't have to go through the legal process, including these labeling of these new schools that are considered failing. So it gives them latitude to now come in and say, well, since you have this failing school, we're just going to take it over. And now that there's been a stay of execution in Jefferson County, and these financial backers are chomping at the bit trying to figure out, well, when are you going to get us our charters in, because you passed the law, but there's still no funding. So they are setting it up so that they can say, well, this school out here in Oldham County is failing, so we're just going to do a takeover. And then I've heard people push back and say, oh, well, the state board doesn't have the resources to take over a district. Well, that's okay. They don't have to. They can simply outsource it to
an
outside organization, a for-profit organization. So it's basically what the charters do in all these other states that we've seen these horrible stories of greed and corruption and school closures and scandals coming out of. We don't need that here in Kentucky.
And I think what people and what, woke me up to the charter school scam 6-7 years ago was I came to the realization I didn't understand if the charter schools were so great, then why weren't the Oldham County, the wealthy white communities asking for them? Because those are the people that are on the up and up in education, right? So if these are so innovative, if they're so awesome, then why are the wealthier communities, and not just in Kentucky, but anywhere around the U.S., why aren't they calling for them? Why are they only setting up in these predominantly poor minority neighborhoods? And it's because they're predatory. They're, like you said before, Gay, the payday loan, that's the type of way they come in. There was an article out today at Network for Public Education. A charter school just today shut down without giving parents or students any notice.
That's routine.
I know, I was going to say
that
every other
happen.
Day. Yeah, that's every other day in the news across the
right.
country.
And
that's normal, and so people have to start asking those types of questions. They're common sense questions, and that's why I changed my mind on them. One of the reasons why, and here in Kentucky, the law says that the local board can deny a charter application, can say no for whatever reason, but that they can go, the charter chain or operator, whatever, can go to Frankfurt to the charter packed board and get that overturned.
Yep.
So you're circumventing democracy. So why, if this is such a good idea, if this is the silver bullet or whatever, why do you have to circumvent democracy? Let the voters choose what is right for their community.
Absolutely. And so, what woke me up to it, again, my experiences at the Academy at Shawnee, nobody could help me understand how a charter school, like simply switching it to a charter school that was run by an outside organization, a for-profit company, was going to help the students who have the low advocacy, low parental involvement. Those parents are not even going to be aware that they need to apply for a charter. They're not going to know how to navigate the system. They're not going to have the time, the technology. There's always an application window. They'll miss the window. They're moving. They're transient. Like, there's just so many reasons that they're homeless. orphaned. I mean, there's just so many reasons why these students would not be accepted or even have the opportunity to apply should Shawnee be converted to a charter in the first place. No one could answer those questions for me, and the responses were always so elitist that that's why to this day I know that it's a scam, because it will only harm those students that they claim that they're intended to help, because they get shuffled around.
And something else that we should point out that was in the news about Robert Stivers repeating the myth that, oh, you know, the West End is clamoring for this. First of all, you know, the Kentucky Alliance and Save Our Schools has been canvassing.
And Dear JCPS.
And Dear JCPS has been canvassing the West End for months. And they're still looking for that family in the West End who's crying out for charters. They haven't found them yet.
Well, and there are families that would benefit from some changes. There's no question about that. But there's no, once they understand what's driving this charter school movement and what would actually be brought into Kentucky would not be the mom and pop, local family teacher concerned organizations running these charters. It would be these chains that have been funding this legislation, because the way the legislation has been written is to make way for all of these powerful loophole-seeking companies. So that's, there may be a good intention. In fact, the whole reason charter schools were created many, many years ago were to be labs, be innovative labs for new ways of teaching and new innovative ways of teaching. But that's been taken over by corruption and greed, and so those always get squeezed out and pushed out. So if that's truly what we wanted here in Kentucky, we should write the law to leave out these out-of-state organizations, and we clearly didn't do that. So even if we did find somebody who says, yes, I would be best served by something different than what the public schools offer, that's not this law. This law
that's
is
not
written
law.
This way. So.
Well, and the other thing is, this is a first. All of a sudden, Robert Stivers cares what the people in the West End think. He didn't care what the people in the West End thought about the gang bill.
True.
He didn't care what the people in the West End think about these onerous work requirements where people can actually be working and still be kicked off of Medicaid. They weren't for that. They didn't have a problem with him. You know, he doesn't seem to care
criminal
that
justice reform, drugs,
there's
homelessness, gun violence and gang violence. I mean, yeah, there's a list of things that they could be. They have the ability. They're the lawmakers. They
yeah,
have
and
the
these are all
something.
Things the West End really does want.
Yes.
And
so
somehow
they care about this one thing.
The only thing they care is when hedge fund, they care about, they cite the West End when hedge fund managers can buy another swimming pool and take a cruise to someplace exotic. What about Bali?
Well, speaking of Kentucky Senate President Stivers, he was quoted, Rylan Barton tweeted about a statement he made yesterday, I guess it was yesterday, that he floats the idea of a charter school bill that is restricted to Louisville and Jefferson County. So again, he wants charters somewhere else. Where is he again?
He's in Clay County. Can
oh,
I tell you something interesting I looked up about Clay County?
Please do.
There was a listing of the 100 best districts in Kentucky based on poverty levels and scores and attendance and a bunch of things, graduation rates. And Jefferson County is on that 100 list. You know what county is not on that list at all?
Clay County.
How did you know?
So why would they start here and not in his own county?
I think we should start in Clay County.
Interesting.
They need it more.
It seems that way. So you are listening to Save Our Schools with Dear JCPS. I'm Gay Adelman, and I'm here with Yvonne Rivera. And on the phone tonight is Tiffany Dunn, and we've been talking about the things that are happening in JCPS at the district level. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the things going on at the state level. We did a little bit of state stuff too, but I also wanted to let our listeners know that Wayne Lewis has made his
Education Czar Wayne Lewis has made his
legislative agenda known, and they had a board meeting yesterday, and some of the things that came out of that meeting were that he is pursuing Hal Heiner's idea of retaining third graders.
A terrible idea.
It is.
What idea? What bad idea does not appeal to Hal Heiner?
Well, what is his education background again?
Oh, that's right. He's got none.
He's not an educator? Wait, why is he making all these rules? Does he send his kids to public school by any chance?
No, he's super Catholic.
Ah, well, but they sure know what our public schools need, including holding back our third graders who are struggling, instead of providing them with the supports they need to move on to the fourth grade. Wouldn't that be a better idea?
You would think so. And this is a bad idea that, you know, sometimes people make proposals that you can see as a bad idea, but it's a new one, so you can't prove it. But lo and behold, since they're pursuing ideas that were passed in other places 20 years ago and have since been proved to be terrible, but they're not dissuaded even one bit,
nope.
We've got proof that this is terrible. This has been something they've done in Florida. And in Florida, of course, kids aren't retained. You'll be shocked and stunned. They're not retained proportionately in all schools.
Well,
of course not. There's a place called Riviera Elementary in Miami. The students are predominantly English language learners. Another huge shock. And something like either half or close to half are being retained at that school. Now, I'm sure that that's not the case in wealthy schools.
No, most certainly not.
So, you know, this is so important. Why aren't you doing it to your kids?
Yep. And another item on his agenda is to weaken the SBDMs.
Because we believe in democracy. Oh, that's right.
Except
we believe in
when it works.
Yeah.
Democracy is the only thing standing in their way of the school takeover. I mean, the entire takeover of our public schools is democracy. So wherever they can slide the democratic process, wherever they can slide parent voice, teacher voice, God forbid teachers get a voice. I mean, any of that, that's what they're going after. And I'm sure you'll bring up the fact that, you know, hiring and firing teachers will become much easier. So.
Yep. Well, and that is part of his agenda.
Right.
So, and there's not to say, okay, as a parent, I've witnessed times when there have been ineffective teachers in the building who should not be there. And there are times when the district does feel like their hands are tied. And I would certainly like to see that process moved along. But everyone is entitled to due process. And that's all that's really happening when an ineffective teacher is not removed immediately, unless there's some risk. Then they are obviously removed immediately. But even if we agree that we need to be able to remove ineffective teachers more rapidly, we certainly don't need the state telling us how to do that. That is something that our own district can handle. And this is really more of their attempt to also undermine the unions. They want to break the backs of the unions. They've made that clear. So they think that unions are the problem, and unions are not perfect. But I would say that the number of times that I've seen the union be the problem as to why something is not working the way that it should in public schools, I can count on one hand. It is so rare that they're choosing the wrong battle if they think destroying unions is going to make all this better.
Well, and let's look at a recent case involving education czar Wayne Lewis himself. Part of this, I think, is sexism. Education is overwhelmingly female. And who do these women think they are?
Mm.
Shooting off their mouths. The next thing you know, they'll start thinking they're as good as men.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot have that. He had a teacher fired because she had the audacity to be mean to him. I mean, that is in essence what happened.
True. She talked back.
She
her students, and that's exactly what she was doing.
She talked back to him. They didn't fire her because she was an ineffective teacher.
Nope.
And they fired her because
we do not need to be doing that.
They fired her because she had the nerve to talk to that man like that.
And the third item.
And she talked to him better than Bevan talked to us.
This is true.
Should he be fired?
Yes.
I'm all about that.
So, and the third item on his agenda is the charter school funding. He intends to get charter school funding in place. He's made that clear.
Illegally, thank you, if need be.
Yes.
He's made that clear.
Break the law, it seems, and go around democracy, and then let us fight it out in court, I guess. But there was a quote, a tweet today from Senator Wilson, which I was pleased to see. Tiffany, do you remember what it said?
Yeah, he's actually echoing what we've been hearing from House members. We've always known that the House was, of course, we found out this session, the House is way friendlier than the Senate. The Senate's kind of the problem, will be a problem with charter appeals, so on and so forth. However, that he kind of echoed the sentiment that we've been hearing in the House, which is that there's not an appetite for charter funding right now. And, you know, one can assume, number one, there's been a zillion reports that have been coming out, like every other day at this point, about how underfunded Kentucky's public schools are with transportation and, you know, after school services, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, people are getting that information. And as organized as we are now, that information is getting out quickly. That used to be kind of swept under the rug, I think, the past few years. But, you know, charter schools have become a huge hot button issue. And when you've got regular public schools underfunded,
yep.
I just don't think that that's a battle they necessarily want to take on. So it's definitely good news. But, of course, as you know, we all know, we will have to still be there. That's something, you know, the teachers should be ready to strike over. If anything,
yes.
Like the sewer bill gets passed for charter funding, teachers need to be ready that we need to walk out on that, because we cannot allow our schools to be underfunded and then money being siphoned away for these private charter schools. So it is definitely good news, but of course we'll have to stay on it.
Yes. And another story that came out of Frankfort today, or not today, but this week, was the graduation requirements. And there seems to be some confusion. I've been reading the posts out on social media. So Dr. Lewis put together some really strenuous graduation requirements and even admitted that graduation rates would drop as a result, which of course would feed the failing schools narrative. So we know one of the reasons they're doing that.
And I want to add something about how, again, 20 years later, they start all the bad ideas. But by the time you should know better, they really are stupid. God, they make me so mad. But anyway, in Florida this year, 13,000 seniors did not graduate, because they had a high-stakes exit test, just like we're planning. It's exactly the same. I can't believe it's not modeled on Florida.
Right.
Where you take it in the 10th grade and blah, blah, blah.
Well, he did dial it back, and so...
But the test is still there. The exit test is still there.
He has indicated that even though he has dialed it back, that doesn't mean he won't be coming back for more later, too. So I think some people feel a sense of relief that it's been dialed back. But there's also some confusion out there, because people who weren't paying attention to the fact that we had these new strenuous graduation requirements proposed, the headlines from this week say that the requirements have been dialed back. And so people think they mean compared to what we have right now, not compared to what was proposed. And so there's all kinds of confusion. There are going to be more strenuous graduation requirements come next year for next year, starting with next year's freshmen, I believe is how that is playing out. But it's not as strenuous as was proposed, you know, this summer, and it will become more strenuous again, because he's indicated that he will keep coming back until he gets what he wants. But I did appreciate that he acknowledged that it's inequitable, and that's the reason that he's, again, another stay of execution, basically, from this privatization agenda. And if we can keep these stays happening long enough to get people elected to office who are going to be public school friendly, and also until the rural communities start paying attention and waking up and voting for these legislators that are voting out these legislators that have enabled this privatization agenda, then we might actually have a chance of leapfrogging past all of these other states that have taken this detour. And yes, when you mentioned that Kentucky is always late to the game, this is one example of when it has worked to our advantage. And let's seize that opportunity and capitalize on that opportunity and become one of the best states in public education. And we've got about 4 minutes left. So I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the other things happening nationally. Please go out to SaveOurSchoolsKY.org and or our Facebook page, Save Our Schools Kentucky, and look at some of the links that we've been sharing. Tiffany mentioned NPE, Network for Public Education. That's Diane Ravitch's organization. They are constantly sharing national stories. The trend is our friend right now. People are waking up. Laws are changing. Legislators are getting elected. New York just put a friendly, public education friendly slate of candidates into office. There are still some states where some shenanigans are going on. We saw what happened in North Carolina, Wake County, North Carolina, which happens to be where Dr. Hargens hails from. And
well,
also,
where she was right before we selected her.
Yes, and Wayne Lewis also. And Indianapolis's superintendent has moved over to D.C. Indianapolis, I'm sure, is celebrating his departure because he is a Broad Academy graduate. And the Broad Academy is a nonprofit that plucks successful corporate people out of the business world and trains them to run a school district in a short period of time. Yes.
Oh, wait a minute. Does that mean I'm more qualified to run GM? Like, I am a teacher, but I've driven a car.
Sure. I think.
And these guys haven't sent their kids to public school.
You definitely should run that.
Maybe I should replace that woman at GM.
Yes, you should.
Oh, my goodness.
Another alarming message that came across my desk from a superintendent in a rural county is that KDE, maybe innocently, maybe not, sent around an email to all the superintendents.
Probably not.
inviting them to a presentation for the new teacher project. Tiffany, have you heard of them?
No, all I've heard of is Teach for America. So when I hear that, that's what I think of, even though it may not be, they may be a Teach for America under a different name.
It is associated with Michelle Rhee.
Ugh.
Tell us yeah. Who Michelle is.
Okay, Michelle Rhee's claim to fame was I don't believe they called her the superintendent of Washington, D.C. I think it's chancellor is the term there. I could be wrong about that.
Yeah.
But she was the chancellor or whatever it was of Washington, D.C. And she had these little showcase charters. And one of them turned out, the one she loved the most was the one that turned out to have a big cheating scandal.
I'm going to need you to go stand by the button because we're going to be wrapping up our show in about 30 seconds. So, yes, please read more about these stories on our Facebook page. You can also use the hashtag Another Day, Another Charter Scandal. You can see these practically daily situations that have been occurring across the country. And Tiffany, tell us what we need to do to speak Tuesday night.
Just at least there, I think 15 minutes early, and sign up to speak. If nothing else, come to hear speakers. Concerns, and like
that,
this is us holding the district accountable.
Yep, and it's at Van Hoos. It starts at 6 p.m. on Tuesday night, and you can also email us at moderator@dearjcps.com if you have some thoughts you want to share and don't want to speak publicly. Thank you again for joining us, Tiffany, and we are going to sign out, and we'll talk to you guys next week.